Even if I wanted to, I can't help you, Jadani. The High Table wants your life. How can you fight the wind? How can you smash the mountains? How can you bury the ocean? How can you escape from the light? Of course, you can go to the dark, but they're in the dark too. So tell me, Jadani, what do you really want?
Passage.
Where did you want to go?
Casablanca.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Mark.
And I'm Kat.
And this episode, we are covering... of all things, because it took so long for us to get to it, because we did cover the first two John Wick films, but now that John Wick 4 is coming out, well, or has been out, actually, so John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum in 2019, we're covering that now, so you guys get at least a little something to listen to now.
Yeah, a little something before we do John Wick 4, yeah. And I promise it won't be another year.
Yeah, exactly. I give it another 2 or 3 weeks, at least. That's it. I promise.
Okay. I'll be ready next week.
That's fine. I'll actually see it.
Yeah. Well, that's important.
Well, with that, we're going to move right along into the synopsis. So, Kat, do you want to read the synopsis or shall I?
Oh, I will go into it. So it says, after gunning down a member of the High Table, the Shadowy International Assassins Guild, legendary hitman John Wick finds himself stripped of the organization's protective services. Now stuck with a $14 million bounty on his head, Wick must fight his way through the streets of New York as he becomes a target of the world's most ruthless killers.
Bam.
Yeah. That says it all.
Yeah, it does says it all. And we'll get into our initial thoughts just after we talk about the people we actually know within the film. So I'll start off. First off, Lance Reddick, who plays Chiron. Yeah, Chiron. Rest in peace. It was sad to hear that he had passed away during the press tour during John Wick 4. That has just basically come out recently. He wasn't old at all. He was what within?
He was 60 years old.
60 years old. That's not an old man. We will be covering within, like I stated before, within the next 2 to 3 weeks, John Wick 4. But unfortunately, this was his last film, as far as I know. But here are other movies that and shows that you can see him in that we all could appreciate here. So apparently he was a regular on The Wire, a TV show from 2002 to 2008. He was in a movie that I actually do like, White House Down from 2013.
More action.
Mm-hmm. Yep, more action. The Fringe, which is a TV series from 2008 to 2013.
Yep.
And the first season of Resident Evil that came out on cable.
There was more than one season?
2022. And as far as I know, not
yet. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
But of all things, too, that our friend Jason Kabasi from Podcastica, who loved Lost from 2004 to 2010. So he was a regular in that particular series as well. And that's
he really brought a lot to that one.
Yeah. He really did. Next up, Kat?
We have Ian McShane. He plays Winston, the manager. Mm-hmm. He was in American Gods, a TV series that I looked forward to. And I was sad that it wasn't picked up.
Yeah.
Kind of died off in its second season, which if you watch, I can kind of see why. It was sad. But I think he's most famous for Deadwood. That was a TV series from HBO. Excellent. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get down his name, but he was one of the most entertaining and interesting characters on that show. He was also in Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger's Tides and many other things. He's been acting for a very long time. And of course, he's a regular on all the John Wick series.
Yeah, he's the one that we all know because we just love Winston.
He's terrific.
Of course, next up, Keanu Reeves, John Wick himself, Neo in the Matrix series, Ted in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure 1, 2, and 3. Johnny Utah in Point Break, which we actually did cover here, Wendy and I on Adrenaline Cinema Podcast. Jack Trevin in Speed, that Kelly and I had actually covered here as well on the podcast.
Yeah, that really rocketed into the mainstream.
Yeah, it did. It put him out as more of an action hero or action actor, as it were. Mm-hmm. And so much more. And of course, our John Wick. Who else?
The one and only.
Yeah, the one and only. Next up?
Next up, we have Halle Berry. She plays Sophia Al-Zawar. She's, of course, from X-Men, the series with Bryan Singer's trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Catwoman in 2004. She was in Swordfish, which I loved.
Yeah, we got to see a lot of her in that movie.
With Hugh Jackman. If you haven't seen it, guys, go back and watch that one.
It's a really good movie. That's something I actually wanted to cover here if people are interested, because I thought it was done so well.
It was a good movie that really went under the radar.
Yeah, it did. My ex-girlfriend, Nikki, actually brought me into it and watched it one night. And I was just like, where was I when this movie came out?
Yeah, it didn't get a lot of attention. But really, go back and watch it. And if someone's interested in covering that one on Adrenaline, get a hold of Mark.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I don't see in here? She was in Monster, which was amazing.
Yeah.
She was amazing in that. Tough movie to watch, but good movie.
She was also in Die Another Day in 2002, which was a James Bond movie.
Mm-hmm. Smaller part in that.
Yeah. Well, honestly, she could be attributed as being one of the Bond women out there.
Yeah, so. She could be.
No, but Academy Award winning Halle Berry.
Mm-hmm. She got that for Monster, correct?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Well, next up, one of my favorites in film, Lawrence Fishburne as the Bowery King. Mm-hmm. And we talked about him in the previous movie for John Wick 2. The Matrix, of course, alum with Keanu Reeves.
Mm-hmm.
And Apocalypse Now in 1979. So he lied about his age in order to be in that film. A lot of people don't know that. So if you want, there's a bunch of podcasts out there that talk about, and there's interviews with Lawrence Fishburne about how he lied to be on Apocalypse Now.
Mm-hmm. When he started acting, his first recorded role was when he was 12 years old on a soap opera. So he's been doing it for a long time.
Oh, yes. But he was also in the movie Car Wash.
Really?
In the 70s. So that's where he really started in film.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember mostly from A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 in 1987.
Yeah, you would. You'd remember.
So I just loved his character because he was like the down to earth orderly that worked in the psychiatric ward. And that's how I got to know him more. Yeah, so
and
than
in
anything.
This, he plays a very out there, charismatic, kind of bombastic character. And he just pours a lot of drama into that one. A little bit of cornball.
He was also in the movie Contagion from 2011, which was really good.
I forgot he was in that one.
And so much more. We could talk about the Marvel films. He was supposed to be Giant Man. And if you'll remember, in Ant-Man and the Wasp, he was there. He was Hank Pym's nemesis or cohort or co-worker at one point and became Giant Man.
The character was, but not Lawrence Fishburne.
But if Lawrence Fishburne was, it would be so amazing.
Yeah, I know. He's amazing in everything he does.
But he was also in The River's Edge in 1986, starring, you know, Keanu Reeves.
Yep, another Keanu vehicle.
He has been around for years. Basically, his first role, as I mentioned before, was Apocalypse Now. And Kat already had mentioned that his first TV acting gig was in a soap opera.
When he was 12 years old, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you picture a 12-year-old Lawrence Fishburne? That would actually be worth looking up. I just can't see him as a kid.
Well, when I watched the movie Car Wash, I do, because he was around that age at the time when he did it. So
Jesus, what a throwback.
He was so young, skinny. Now look at him. He's bald.
He's a big guy.
He shaves his head. He's so tall.
Yeah, I didn't see that because I don't think Keanu is really very tall. But it doesn't show up when he's next to people. He's like, he's not very tall. How tall do you think
he is? He's close to 6 feet, at least.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Well,
he's not a short man.
No, Well, nothing wrong with that.
Nah.
No.
Next up would be?
Oh, Asia Kate Dillon as an adjudicator. It's hard to pick a favorite character in here, but I love the character she played. She coded as non-binary. They never used pronouns, and they didn't make it really clear, but it was one of the first movies with a non-binary character in it, even though they didn't specify her as non-binary. She's in Billions, which her character is actually non-binary. Mm-hmm. And of course, John Wick 1, 2, and 3. It says possibly 5. It would be great if she's back. And she also came out as non-binary herself in 2014, after I think it was around the time of John Wick 2. She's just fabulous actress. Oh, she was in Orange is the New Black also.
Yeah.
So I want to see more of them.
Yeah, she was a regular, or they were a regular within Orange is the New Black from 2013 to 2019. So they've been very much around all this time. Usually characters like that or actors like that are there. They're not on your radar. You just see them and you just play it off like NYPD Blue or Hawaii 5-0 or those shows.
Yeah, and they show up in there. And please forgive me if I used the pronoun she earlier.
It's fine. You know, honestly, this is a new world and we're all getting used to it. And I still have issues with that. I kind of correct people at times and then people correct me.
I want to go back to like my default could be they and them and make it a simpler.
Or it anyway. Or you. Usually people will say it, meaning me, but it's okay. It's the problem. Mark's the problem.
Mark.
All right. Well, next up, Mark Dacascos. All right. Awesome. I get this one. Zero. He plays Zero.
So good.
For me, the first thing that rushing into my mind was, and this is according to Kat, because she put these notes in here. Oh my God, Iron Chef, the original Iron Chef, Chairman's nephew. But he was also the chairman for Iron Chef America, Australia, and Mexico, and a chairman for Netflix series Iron Chef Quest for an Iron Legend.
Yeah, that kind of blew me away. That's the first thing I thought of. I didn't realize, I guess, that he was had more acting roles. You know, he was the Iron Chef. He's not an actor. That's who he was.
But to go into more acting roles that I've actually known or him for, it was the Crow TV series from 1998 to 1999. It was only a one season thing, and it was done on cable TV. And it was a continuation of Eric Draven. We actually did cover The Crow on my other podcast, Panels to Pixels podcast, with our friend Lara. And Lara and I covered that. And that was that particular episode revolved around the movie, which, no, that was Brandon Lee.
Tragically. But
Mark Dacascos actually picked up the show after that. And they did a full season. And I believe I still have the full season on DVD. And I thought he was such an amazing talent. Oh, my God. If you look at him in this movie and then you watch that particular season, you go, why is he wearing a wig in The Crow? Oh. He's not. That's his hair. Uh-huh. He's got long black hair.
Well, he did as the chairman's nephew. So.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and look at that. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, I suggest it to everybody. Go watch the show if you can. You probably could find it on YouTube.
Probably.
He's also in Double Dragon from 1994, which was a movie based upon the video game.
Oh, okay.
Not a great movie, a video game, but it was okay.
I hear he's done a few B parts.
Yeah, he has. But the thing is, he's more prevalent in these more jiu-jitsu, karate style.
Martial arts style.
Martial arts kind of films and shows. Hawaii 5-0, the TV series from 2010 to 2020.
It's been out a lot longer than I thought.
Yeah, same here. And there's other things, too. He's a constant working actor, so I'm sure you'll find a lot more stuff. We just want to give you a little bit, just a nugget, a soupçon of what these people have done. That's it. And next up, and lastly, Kat,
Angelica Houston as the, let me see, she was the director of the Rusca Roma group. And we don't have much here for notes. I do know, I think the first role I remember her in was Pritzi's Honor with yes. Jack Nicholson. I remember that role. She was also in Witches, which has been remade recently.
Yes.
What else do you know her from, Mark?
Of all things, you'll laugh. Ice Pirates from 1984.
You're right. I laughed.
Well, it is a comedy.
She's done a lot of work. She's a fabulous actress.
Yeah, she was in This is Spinal Tap the same year in 1984. The Grifters in 1990 with John Cusack.
That was a great movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou from 2004, which had Bill Murray and a whole slew of
Luke
celebrity actors. Yeah. Not Luke, other brother. The one with the crooked nose.
His brother,
the one with the crooked nose.
Oh my God. Yeah, forgive my professionalism there.
And so much more that she's done. She comes from a legacy of film actors and directors, too. That's the whole thing.
She's one of the Houstons.
Yeah, exactly. So, we have Angelica Houston. I almost left this out, and then Kat corrected me, and I put this in.
Well, and there was one other actor I did think of, and maybe it's just because he's had bigger roles. In the recent one is in 2023,
mm-hmm.
which is the Yellowstone series. He's got a big role in that. And the other one was what, Mark?
I don't know. Are you talking about Harrison Ford?
I'm talking about Jerome Flynn.
Oh, all right. I don't watch those shows.
Okay. Well, I think you probably saw the other one.
All right. So, listeners, this is where we go into general thoughts of the movie, which is John Wick 3, Parabellum. So, your overall thoughts or general thoughts of the movie, Kat? What are your thoughts?
Well, I love the whole series. I would have a hard time, picking this is my favorite over John Wick, but the original is always best. That's the one that grabbed my heart. But
yeah,
higher production values of this one are very clear.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot more different colored mood lighting. The cinematography is a little different, a little flashier, which, you know, is kind of an improvement over the first. It adds something. I'll put it that way. It adds something. I like that in this one. The action sequences are choreographed to like classical music. They're not
like
the
dance.
Loud, yeah, like a dance. They're not the bombastic kind of music we get in a lot of other action films, and that kind of makes it a little different. And you know, we kind of find out why there's some more classical music set to the choreography. And of course, like all the other ones, the choreography is just, it's like a dance. It's beautiful, except they're killing people. Yeah, that part's not as beautiful, but so I really love it. I like it a lot.
It actually does remind me almost like there was a couple of scenes within the TV show Preacher, and it gives me reminiscence of that particular show and how they choreographed the fighting structure and style. Now, if they could actually do a backup of a scene in an aisle, which they did in Preacher, I would love to see it again. Where they literally show you a hallway from a perspective, like a widescreen perspective, of somebody fighting and battling their way down the hallway, like in Preacher. That would be amazing, just like a perspective from an outsider's point of view. So I'm hoping that we get something like that in the near future, because they only did that and only have done that on that particular show. But that show is basically like a comic book.
Yeah, that was a wild, wild program.
But it was based after a comic. But mm-hmm. honestly, Keanu Reeves, huge comic book fan, and has his own comic book called Berserker.
Mm-hmm. I have that one. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're trying to adapt that as a movie as well.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and part of the beauty of the choreography with Chad Stahelski
mm-hmm.
is that it's done in, just like in 2, we talked about Chapter 2, it's one long shot. There's not a lot of editing. It's not multi-camera where they're cutting back and forth. And that's part of what just makes it even more like a dance. You know,
it's single camera work, just focusing in on the action between the two from maybe one or the other's perspective mm-hmm. when they're fighting. And yeah, that's interesting. On this, we get a little bit more of a wider shot on a lot of action sequences, mm-hmm. few cuts, maybe pans, and that's about it, which I do enjoy because the cinematography in this was very much point on accurate on how they film those actual action sequences. Mm-hmm. And I'll go more into depth when we talk about those particular sequences, because I really did enjoy them. With me, I just love how the movie just takes off right away from the last one.
Yeah, picks
it
up
literally
right,
drops us off right there, because exactly. literally this takes place within a matter of 3 weeks mm-hmm. in John Wick's life. So it's been a while, honestly, everybody. It's been a long while since, if you look at the amount of time between movies and filming,
right?
They have to really get to where they're in sequence with other films and how they're dressed, what knife wound happens. So they have to get some sort of timestamp.
Continuity,
exactly, mm-hmm. of what's going on within it, because it's literally the 3 weeks of a life of John Wick himself and what he has to endure.
Well, they always do have the other films to go back to match it up.
Yep, they could actually match it up, but oddly enough, I've seen other films where they have not matched up anything correctly, and it's like, oh, hold on, the wound's on the right side, but on the previous film was on the left.
Oh, but they do a wonderful job of paying attention to every detail.
Well, that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm glad that they do that. So that way you could watch these movies back to back. If you want to do a whole John Wick marathon movie run, you could do that.
It would be like one long movie.
Exactly.
Which I wouldn't be against.
No. But we find him at this point where he's excommunicado. And the announcements are out there in the world. He has to battle his way out, and he's got a target on his head. Now it's time for him to defend himself and use all his resources that he used as a hitman to defend himself. Mm-hmm. And literally things that we don't know of from John Wick, of things that he's hidden, even from his wife when he was married, too, because we see a
right.
little bit of
we
that.
We don't even know. I mean, she didn't know that he was an ex-assassin.
Exactly.
You know, and then there's like, did she know he was a ballet dancer? I don't think so.
No.
He had to have like some kind of story for her. I like that in these movies, we find out who John is by how people react to him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not through what he's telling people, what he's doing other than that he's a talented assassin. But mm-hmm. we really find out who he is from other people's reactions and descriptions of him. And that's a little different than many movies.
The one thing I truly love about this movie is that I love the fact that he gets the taxi driver, and the first thing he has to do is drop off the dog at the Continental.
I know. He needs to have Sharon watch after the dog. You can't lose another dog.
No. And he pays the cabbie to literally take the dog to the Continental, and cabbie does it. And then the cabbie winds up taking him where he has to go next, which is a lot of sequences that we will be going into, obviously, when we talk about the movie.
Okay. Well, what do we have next, Mark?
Well, what we have next is our favorite scenes within the movie. So you could do this in any order that you want, Kat. You don't necessarily have to go in order, but I have a tendency of when I write notes as I'm watching, just going in order. But if you
that's
go,
what I did too.
But if you go out of order, it's fine. That way we could talk because, I like going into the order of the film.
Mm-hmm. That's
not
what
100%.
I did,
and sometimes I'll leave out a whole scene and everybody be like, you left that out. Well, that wasn't my thing.
That's the way it is.
That was my thing.
Spontaneity.
All right. Okay. So, well, let's start with yours.
Okay. Well, and I'll throw this out there. I have a funny feeling that it's one of yours too. So you can fill in more details than I even have here. But the first one I have is the throwing knife scene in the antique weapons store.
Was it an antique weapons store or was it a museum? Because it looked like to me it was more of a museum
okay.
that he was in.
Antique weapons museum. Yeah, I think you're correct.
And we first start the scene, if you look at it, he's running from the other guys at this point.
Is that after he gets just the scene that goes straight from the motorcycle chase? Or no, that was after the horses.
After the horses, mm-hmm. And this is after the library scene too, which I'll get to after this.
That was something.
Basically, he's in this antique weapons museum, and he has to formulate something out of these Russian and German guns to put together a pistol. He's literally taking apart pistols.
Is that why he went to the museum?
Not necessarily. It was like the first thing he went into, from my understanding, from what I remember.
Damn handy.
And he just puts together, and he knows he has X amount of shots, but the click, 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 click. And he knows that there's one bullet in the chamber to do what he needs to do for this one particular gun, and then shoots it. Boom. And then he was able to do that with another. But after that, it leads into another hall room that has other weapons.
The hallway of swords, right?
It's hallway of swords. And then it goes into the hallway of knives. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's like he's hitting them on accuracy, throwing these knives perfectly into vital organs.
Oh, yeah. If there's nothing else about John Wick, he is accurate. He never misses.
He's dead on accurate, and he knows how to hit them.
Mm-hmm. I liked in that one, too, because, this is highly, highly violent movie. They all are. There's always this little tinge of humor in there, you know, and when they're fighting in that hallway, they're physically fighting. They kind of stop and look both ways and realize there are just cabinets and cabinets of swords and knives. And just that little bit of humor where, you know, they catch themselves and look around. Just tiny things like that kind of help.
Yeah, literally everything's around them that they could use as a weapon to throw at somebody. But of course, John proves that he's top of the game, and he walks out of that and able to get on to the next scene. But for me, my first point was basically before this particular scene was the library scene. I thought that was really intense. He asks for a specific book that he used to put some things of value in, which was pretty much a Russian style. It was a Russian written book, a Russian author.
Well, and it had his ticket for the director in it, didn't it?
Correct. He had coins that we know, just like he had in a safe in a cement foundation of his house, had more very coins safe in there, a medallion, and a cross to bargain with.
Yeah, that was his rosary, and I think the other one was a crest of the Ruskies.
Which was the medallion. The Ruskin.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And plus a picture of him and his wife, which he leaves behind within the book after kissing it because it was a memory. He puts it back, seals it back up, puts it back where it belongs within the library. Mm-hmm. So it means that maybe we go back to that library at a certain point at the end of the movie run. But keep that in mind, listeners. That might be an Easter egg right there for us to think about.
For chapter 5?
Chapter 5. I haven't seen chapter 4. You have, but...
I promise. No spoilers.
But the fight scene in the library, I thought, with Dante was amazing.
Oh, yeah. We see a kill there that I don't think I've ever seen in a movie and anything. That was amazing. Well,
that man was damn tall. I mean,
it was taller, a big guy.
Mm-hmm. Taller than Keanu. So John Wick was, you know, oversized by some tall dude. And it just reminded me of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, yeah.
And Bruce Lee.
Oh, when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was fighting Bruce Lee.
Correct.
I can see that comparison.
Game of Death, I think it was, but I don't know. I honestly, listeners, you know me, when I do these things, when I do the copy and paste, I do the Mark Bernardin thing. So sorry, Mark, if you're ever on. I know you're with Kevin Smith and Fat Man Beyond and everything else, but I do the copy and paste thing that Mark Bernardin does on Fat Man Beyond for news or information sometimes. And I do that specifically for this, for unknown and interesting facts. But the first thing I thought of was Bruce Lee, a Bruce Lee movie. Yeah. But that was it. That scene itself, how overbearing. But the fact that John was able to get out of that and then move on to the next scene, which we discussed already.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, they all just run into each other. But I mean, that lethal book, yeah. You know, it's like a curb stomp with a book. That was hard to watch.
Oh, yeah. Your next one?
Oh, well, my next one would be the scene with Zero and John on the sofa when they're waiting to see Winston at the Continental. When they sit down, very serious, and actually John sits down and Zero walks in and not only sits on the sofa, but he sits like right next to John, gets right in his face, which was so weird. You know, how unusual. So John looks at him, gets up, and moves to the chair. And who knows what Zero's going to say. Up until now, he's been this serious assassin. Yeah. And he turns into this, like, goofy fan. Just, it was so hilarious. And he did such a good job at it, you know. God, what does he say to him? Oh, he tells him, I got to tell you, I've been looking forward to meeting you for a long time. I'm a huge fan. He's here to kill him. I'm a huge fan. And the dog comes in. The dog comes running in.
Yeah.
Who's, I believe his name is just Dog. And and runs up, gets on Keanu's lap, and he goes, oh, is that the dog? I mean, he's kind of like fanboying out about the dog, too. So it was funny. You know, the dog is licking John's face, all the affection, and Zero goes into, you know, saying like, you know, we're a lot alike. I'm just like you. And John is having nothing about it. He's just, no, we're not. You know, and you know, John Wick, he barely gets more than three sentences in a row when he's speaking. But it's just, you know, he's like, we're the same. We're both, you know, we both have this gift.
Yeah.
It's just like, we're not. No, we don't. And that's about it. And then Sharon comes in and says that the manager will see you now. And only talking to Keanu. And Zero's looking for some kind of, I think, validation. You know, he really wants John to give him some kind of signal that, yeah, we're alike. And John is definitely, definitely not feeling that way. But when he gets up to go to actually the administrative wing, which is a great big vault, the dog comes along and he turns around and he looks at the dog and he tells him to sit and stay. And I seriously expected Zero at that moment to sit and stay. Seriously. I mean, because I don't know. I think John was saying that to Zero. I seriously think that that's what it was meant to do.
I think so, too.
Yeah. And they do walk away, and Zero just kind of has this look on his face, and he just sits down. And of course,
like a puppy dog.
Yeah. He wasn't invited, so he does literally stay. So that was just, again, a little bit of that humor that gets us through the violence. And that's one scene where you see them just, you know, sitting down and interacting as human beings.
But I think this is after the desert scene where they were dragged away, him and Sophia. And
oh, it could be. I know that they're fighting. He comes back to New York and there's a big fight. I think that might be when the motorcycle scene where he kills three guys with a motorcycle because he's John Wick. And Zero is chasing him and he gets right to the Continental and reaches out and just puts his hand on the step, which qualifies as being, you know,
safe.
Yeah. Being safe, you know, no business done on Continental grounds. And I guess when you put your hand on the step, you are now on Continental grounds. Mm-hmm. So that was right before it. And they go inside because he wants to see, and I think he looks at Sharon and he says, I'd like to see the manager.
Yep. And I think at a certain point they have that conversation, but they leave and John is taken away and he meets Sophia.
But that's you're saying that was before this scene.
I was thinking that. I might be wrong. So listeners, you're probably going to be like, oh, we watched this in continuity. Mark and Kat didn't really do anything accordingly.
We're chopping it up. Well, we did say we weren't going to go in order of scenes.
With me, the fight with Sophia and John at the original forging of the coins, where they actually forged those coins. I thought
in Casablanca. Yeah,
in Casablanca. I thought that was amazing. The fact that they got there, but the dog was shot. And
well, did the dog had he had like the doggy backpack on? So
he did. So he was fine Kevlar? Because you see the bullet was it didn't penetrate.
Right.
Because John picks it up.
A Kevlar suit on.
Yes. But Sophia was a badass taking revenge with John after that and on the way out. But also the dog as well on the way out. That dog was taking out people, biting them by the throat. Mm-hmm. Anything.
Yeah, I don't think you could look at the dog as a weapon or as an ally.
I think he was an ally.
That dog was an assassin. He was not necessarily a weapon.
He was there to help, and he is family. And especially with the conversation with Sophia and John himself, because
before they went to see Barada,
in Casablanca. Mm-hmm. And it was literally that whole thing, because he shows the medallion. And
right. She's owed, or he's owed.
He's owed by her. Same thing with. What was it? Who we talk about with Angelica Houston? She was also involved with that too, because we kind of missed out and left out that about the Russian Malarina. Oh, yeah.
Right, right.
So,
because in it, all the people that help him, then the adjudicator. We haven't even talked about her scenes. There's so much to talk about. Oh, in this there movie.
Are. I have other but notes.
She goes to adjudicate, to judge and mete out consequences for each of these characters that helped him. The director, the Bowery King. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, yeah, the director was her title. And
correct.
We find that that's who his family is, that he was adopted into that family, into the family of Romas. And she calls him Gianni. I wrote it down.
It was Gianni, though. That definitely was.
Yeah. So, I mean, we find out where he's from, what his real name is. And yeah, we didn't have that scene in there. There's a lot in there. I mean, like I said, we could talk about every scene in this movie for a very long time.
Like another 5 hours. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. The interesting thing is that they go through all these steps. And just like I said, with the library, he was getting all those affects that he needed to get, like the coin, the medallion, the cross. And this was his way of salvation, to get away. And he was utilizing these people that either A, brought him into this, or he was involved with during that time.
Right. And when you think of that, like he had the coins in underneath the cement, in the house. If he had these items in a book that were going to give him favors from the people he goes and meets, he had to have at some point been thinking he may be forced to come out of retirement.
Yes.
Because it's kind of like he didn't plan to do that, but he was prepared. I guess that would be it. He was prepared.
He was prepared for anything at that point, mm-hmm. even though he kind of hid his life from his wife. But
she didn't know anything. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And then she also hid a few things, too, that we found out from Angelica Houston's character, too, because we find that out as well.
Mm-hmm.
One particular scene that got me was the pool scene, and I thought that was really cool and how they filmed it, because it was all underwater.
With them shooting underwater they're shooting the film, but he is also shooting a gun underwater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that also leads right into the fight in what I like to call the Crystal Skull Room.
Okay.
Because with Zero that? And his men.
Oh, with his apprentices.
Yes.
Or his students. He calls them his students.
He calls them his students, but it's mm-hmm. multi-leveled. But it goes from the whole crystal skull thing, because they're literally human skulls as crystals inside behind glass cases.
Is that when they're in where the glass floor is also?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah. I thought.
And Winston says that room is like that so that nothing could be hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
unfortunately, it can't be hidden anymore, but they wind up breaking and destroying everything. But the choreography in that was amazing on the fight scenes themselves, because it was literally Keanu Reeves as John Wick being attacked by three other of his students and Zero himself. And right, him having and at to some take point, them all just out. Like
Zero, the two of the assassins, two of his students stop. When they think they've really got John, they're going to get him. This is his end. And they also stop and tell him how much they admire him. how they'd like, it's nice that they got to meet him. Now, they weren't as goofy as Zero.
Yeah, they didn't fanboy as much.
Yeah. They weren't gushing. But, so that happened with his students, too.
Did you have another one?
Oh, I did, and it's kind of long and could be all over the place. So I'll try and be more succinct. You know, that word. But it's actually the scene right after the one I mentioned before with Zero and John on the couch. Mm-hmm. And it's when Sharon takes him, he's going to go to see the director in the administrative wing or area. And they walk out and literally open up this vault door with, you know, 3 foot thick walls. And what they do is they go in there it's also an armory to collect all the weapons. So we have another scene where, you know, there's a whole wall covered with weapons and Sharon takes them out and they talk about what the weapons are. I don't have any of that down here. But also what happens in this is we see Sharon, he joins the fight. We see him get into the action.
Yeah.
So that was great. And this whole series has Sharon and John talking to Winston. And while they're having a conversation, it's showing the adjudicator making a call to have the Continental deconsecrated.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see, you know, they're throwing bombs disbursement into the Continental. The adjudicator goes upstairs and sits down in her room, just waiting for it to be over. So, I mean, that's going in and out of the sequence. But my favorite part of that scene is when Winston is talking to Sharon and John, and he addresses them, because this is where we get the name of the film, you know, Chapter 3, Parabellum. So, yeah.
Wow.
So when they're talking, he tells Sharon, I'm sure you'll make the Continental proud. You know, so he gives him that nod. And then he looks at John and he says, and you, Jonathan, you do what you do best, hunt. And mm-hmm. then they both walk out to, you know, to start the fight, yeah. Sharon and Mr. Wick. And that's when it's in a subtitle, but when Winston says, if you want peace, prepare for war. And underneath it, parabellum means prepare for war. And it comes from, it came from an ancient Roman military book that was written in the Middle Ages. And the original quote was, let him who desire peace prepare for war. But that's where we get parabellum, which is actually two words, but they put it together for, you know, the title in here. But I love Winston and, you know, I cannot tell you what he said in Latin, but it was a Latin phrase that, you know, basically is, if you want peace, prepare for war.
Yeah.
What's your next one? And that's all I have.
Well, it would be the ending scene. And yeah. I have notes about additional scenes and things that I pretty much liked, as well as quotes. But we'll go to my last one, which would be the ending, which we see John giving the finger to the Bowery King, who's sitting there in front of him.
Yeah, on the hand where he's missing a finger, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Giving him the finger. He's missing his ring finger on his left hand, where his wedding ring would have been.
Yes, that's his concession to the elder.
And basically, and everything unfolds all messed up and pissed because Winston keeps the Continental with his deal with the adjudicator.
And he shoots John.
Yeah.
But he double-crosses John, which, you know... Winston is kind of the politician. He's going to get what he needs and what he wants in there, however he can. But to double cross Jonathan, that was too much.
Yeah, but the cool part of this is the Bowery King lays it all out there. And you could see where the Bowery King lands and his loyalties, because basically ends there and it goes to the sequel.
Right. And he's not going to, he's loyal. He's going to stick with John, more loyal than Winston was.
All right. Well, those were our favorite scenes. Were there any additional notes that you had taken about the movie that we didn't discuss?
Yeah. Well, and in that scene you're talking about it's the final scene where he is fighting Zero. That's the longest sustained battle he's had in all three movies.
Oof.
It was 239 seconds long. And I mean, the battle he had in John Wick Chapter 2 with Cassian was long. But there were little periods within that that they weren't actually fighting. So this is the longest sustained fight he's had. And I thought, again, Zero, the comical relief in this, when at the end of the battle, spoiler, he dies. John just, he impales him with a sword right in his chest. So we think he's dead, and he sits up and he tells John, I just need a second. I'll catch up with you. John's walking away and he says, no, you won't. So, I mean, again, it's just that bit of humor that they actually talk about in interviews that they had to put in there. You know? Yeah,
it mm-hmm. makes sense.
So I had that one. Then I also just had some stats. So let's go ahead through your...
I have a few notes.
Little known facts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. I'm going through a few notes that I have. One note I have, let's talk about that doctor in the very beginning that stitches up John.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about loyalty right there.
Yeah. He's willing to put his life on the line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He basically looks out for John after years of work with him. And makes John shoot him in certain places just to protect John and himself.
Yeah, I love he points out a place for John to shoot him. John yep. does. And then John shoots him a second time. And he's yep. like, hey, you didn't have to do that. John's like, well, you wanted it to be believable.
Believable. Because he had to show, because, yeah, I wouldn't have been able to give you those drugs. They wouldn't believe I wouldn't give them to you willingly.
Right. So. And that was after, was it midnight when he had the 2 hours? Before he was in yeah. peril. Anyway, there was a time limit. And yeah, they went over. He finishes stitching himself up because the doctor can't, because, you know, time has run out. But yeah, then he tells him where the painkillers are, which is assisting him after that point. And that's what he said. They'll know. You know, how would they know? I don't know. But he was sure they'd know.
Yeah. The next note that I have, which is very interesting, we talk about Winston at this point again. But this is earlier on. And this is with him and the adjudicator. And the fact that the adjudicator basically tells him, you have 7 days. Basically because she knew that Winston was helping John.
Mm-hmm.
And basically says, get your affairs.
In order.
In order. Mm-hmm. In order to do that. And
because there are rules and consequences.
Exactly. And the one thing which I love, because it's a Winston thing to say, but you kind of realize where he's at the very end, when he says, have a lovely stay at the Continental.
Because she checks in.
Mm-hmm. She does check in. So he's playing favorites at that point to keep himself alive. Wow, I have a bunch.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I love that all that protected John, Winston, Bowery King, put themselves out for him. You know, I thought in the very beginning of watching the film, you know, these were as I was watching again. It showed dedication just to John himself, that John found loyalty in certain people at times. Bowery right. King, well, obviously.
And they all live by this code.
Yeah.
You know, that under the table, they live by a code that the high table has put out there. So yeah, they have the coins, their commitments, they owe each other. And once they've done that favor, then it's like, we're even. And it's set a lot. Yeah.
Now, the next one is a testament to New York City filming.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a scene in Grand Central Station. And it was the standoff, which was amazing, between Zero and John.
Yeah, and his two students. Yeah.
Yep.
Because they appear and disappear pretty miraculously.
They actually filmed that there in Grand Central Station. You know how much money it costs to shut down Grand Central for X amount of hours?
No idea.
It's ridiculously expensive.
Well, they did have a lot more money for Chapter 3 than Chapter 1. Chapter 1 was done with not a lot of backing. That's mm-hmm. why they went with Thunder Road. And they all took a, you know, pay cut. They were not paid what they would be in larger movies because they love the series. They love John Wick and they wanted it filmed. But by Chapter 3, they had a lot more money to work with.
And for somebody who's lived in New York City a majority of his life and has been to Grand Central so many times, for those who've never ventured or visited it, it is a wonder just to be there alone as a visitor, as it is somebody who lives in New York.
Well, I go I there and I still once look up. As a visitor.
Yeah.
I saw it a couple years ago actually during a meetup with you and our good friend Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing feat just to look up above and how grand it is. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said this was filmed in Grand Central Station. It's not something that they could easily mock up or do CG. So
The Continental is a pretty famous building also.
Correct.
Yeah. I can't tell you what it is because I don't know much about New York. You know, it's Middle Westerners. Ask me about goats and a farm. I can fill you in. Ask me about New York and that's yours.
I had one scene that I just enjoyed so much. And it was the adjudicator calling Winston and saying, I knew you couldn't keep this up. But, and then Winston just hangs up.
Yes.
The fact that he just hangs up on her. on them.
Yeah. Yeah. She's used to being listened to. But yeah, I love Winston does that. He's pulls out a couple things and he's pretty terrific in chapter four also. Yeah. Well, and the adjudicator is a brand new type of part of the high table. She's sanctioned by them to, you know, adjudicate, which means she can go listen to what happened, judge what needs to be done, and she's authorized to mete out the consequences. So, you know, she goes to the Bowery King and his consequences are 7 cuts because Bowery King gave John 7 bullets. Mm-hmm. So he gets 7 cuts. We see her go visit the director, and the director from the start, when Giovanni shows up, says, you brought death to my doorstep. Well, at least adjudicator shows up, doesn't kill her, but you know, if she does a praying hands thing and they skewer right through her hands, a little hard to, I just get tingles in my hand thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
And I was curious though, the Halle Berry character helps him, but well, the adjudicator, I guess she couldn't go to Casablanca. She was busy in New York. But yes. She didn't get any consequences. And of course, Winston's consequences is he's no longer the manager and the Continental is deconsecrated.
Yeah.
Well, until he works his way back into good favor with the high table and the adjudicator.
Correct.
Yeah. What else? You've got a lot of notes here, Mark.
That was it. That was all
that
my notes.
That was it?
That was the last of my notes. So.
All right. Well, I think there was something about the dogs too and the filming in Casablanca. With the dogs, you'd mentioned they were wearing like the Kevlar suits, but you also were. When they were filming, yeah, they were, you know, hey, after the first one, you know, the puppy dies. So you got to take care of your dogs.
Oh, well, that's the one thing I loved about that. The fact that they actually did keep this dog and he keeps going and he becomes not just, you know, John's dog.
He's a character. Yeah.
A character in the movies itself and is also what I think as a partner.
Yeah, exactly. And Halle Berry character, she has her two dogs, very beloved dogs. You can see that in the scene and in the how it's written. But when they filmed it, they had a really hard time with the dogs. For one thing, the dogs don't know you're taking several takes. Mm-hmm. Every time they're trained to attack, that's their part in the movie. So every single time, you know, they go, these dogs are attacking. You can't direct them like people. But also they had a hard time filming it because it was actually in Casablanca. And there are so many feral cats that the dogs were constantly distracted. So it was really hard to film. And they hired people to shoo the cats away so that the dogs could concentrate and do their job. I thought that was funny, you know, of all the things that you think of. But, you know, dogs are great actors and they need a little extra help too, I guess. So that was one of my other thoughts.
Cool. Well, with that, we'll move right into what we like to call on this particular podcast, interesting facts or unknown facts about the movie John Wick 3 Parabellum. So, Kat, you have something that you posted here that I want you to start off with. And I think you already mentioned it, but you go into a little bit more depth.
I do. Oh, look at, there's the rest of my notes with a quote in it. How about that? Well, I'm not sure what you're talking about with the notes. I guess what I had were just some facts or updates, some news about upcoming movie and the upcoming series. I liked some of the stats that came with this movie. I love those for all of them. Like there were 120 kills in chapter two. I think they logged 80 and the numbers are different depending on who's counting them.
All right.
But they had 90, according to some of the charts, 94 kills in this movie. John wore 11 different suits, which surprised me. You know, there were 26 different kinds of guns used. They had 22 deaths by sword or knives. And it said in parentheses, pencil. I don't remember the pencil kill in this one. I'm sure there was one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
there's got to be a pencil kill. But I'm guessing the 22 deaths by sword and knife, they had to be mostly in that weapons museum. So that was funny. 3 deaths by horse. I think the dogs just attacked and assisted in that fight scene. And then there, of course, is the 1 death by book.
So, well, the pencil kill would keep up with the tradition of John Wick because he used a pencil before. So that's what he's most notorious for. Right.
Famously, when we find out from the Russian mob that he's the Baba Yaga and that, you know, you don't mess with John Wick. For God's sakes, he killed 2 people with a pencil.
Yep. Well, to start off what I have listed, I'll say this for the first one. John Wick 3 was the biggest physical test yet for Keanu Reeves. Reeves has been put through his paces on every John Wick film so far, but he definitely ranks the 3rd chapter as the most demanding yet. The vision for this film was so ambitious that I went into serious training for 4 months before. That's what he told Indo-Asian News Services. There are so many different kinds of action sequences, not only more styles of martial arts and more gunplay, but also motorcycles, horses, and dogs. So the training was intense, but honestly, I love it. I love this character, and I love the John Wick universe we've created. So that's a quote from Keanu Reeves from the Business Standard.
Right, and I love Keanu Reeves, everything he's in, but he is definitely John Wick. And amazing that he does most of his own stunts now. You know, yes. Chad is directing. And one of the other things I found interesting when I was looking at overall, which is just a little different than the old-fashioned action films, I guess, in a lot of them, almost all of these actors are, you know, middle-aged. They're 50 or older. I think Halle Berry was 52. John, of course, in this one, I think is 54. Winston is, I think Ian McShane is near 70. And of course, Lawrence Fishburne is up there too. Yeah. But, Zero. He was 52. He's close to John's age. So I just really, I appreciate that there's so much action and these actors are all,
they're putting it on the line.
Yeah. And they're, you know, they're getting in shape and killing it, you know, just like in Nobody. So. And that was one of the things I appreciated. It wasn't in the notes, but, you know, as middle-aged people got to appreciate that stuff.
Well, next up, Reeves learned how to throw knives for real. The incredible fight scene down the hallway of knives required Reeves to undergo extensive training with real and rubber knives in order to perfect the technique.
Well, let's hope there were a lot of rubber knives. Yeah,
exactly right. He states, "We train with rubber knives and I train with real knives." He told Uprox, "We were trying to get the technique and how you would throw. I was also practicing techniques where you didn't spin the knife." So even so, Stalevski was eager to, quote unquote, throw a little reality in there by having many of the knives go wide for the mark or wide of the mark. "We wanted to have a realistic snowball fight with knives," the director told the Observer. That's an interesting way of describing it.
Yeah, I did see in one of the interviews, they talked about how, or no, someone else I was talking to or a podcast, how the knives and the guns are almost, they're an extension of his hand, especially the guns. You know, they're just part of his person as a weapon.
Next up, it was Keanu's idea to have John Wick in the desert. So it was Reeves who hit upon the idea of sending John Wick to the desert, although it's fair to say he was inspired by a Hollywood classic. And he states, "I wanted John Wick in desert passing a dune," he told Collider. "Saudi Arabia, Lawrence of Arabia in a suit, John Wick." He states, "I thought it would be cool if John Wick was in a suit and in a desert. Somehow I love the character, so I was like, how do we get John Wick on a dune?" Stalevski loved the idea and with writer Kolstad worked out and how and why of getting there.
Yeah, and that made me think of, in one of the interviews, he was talking about how he said, if you see something in the movie, it's because it's something we love. That he and Keanu would sit down, they'd talk about what they love, whatever. Like the ballet?
And they would throw it in there.
Yeah, like the ballet? Okay, ballet's in the movie. He told a story about how he was in New York and near Christmas and there's horses in the carriages. And he looked at it and he thought, oh, well, where can they take those horses? And he asked the carriage driver and he said, oh, over here, and showed him the stables. And Chad was like, hey, that's in the movie. It gave him the idea for the horses as weapons. So yeah, a lot of that, like you said, Keanu loved the idea of being in the desert. It's in the movie. So
yeah, if it's talked about, they have an idea, they'll throw it in. Literally is what it happens. All right. Next up, John Wick's martial arts skills were seriously upgraded. John Wick's hand-to-hand combat skills receive a major upgrade. Reeves stepped up his preparations this time around with a particular focus on his judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu skills. He states, I started training a little sooner this time, so my judo is a little bit better. Really? He did the Matrix. He explained to Collider at this point.
A little bit better. Better is a...
Yeah. He says, it's been fun to be back in the saddle. I've spent more time, so I'm a little bit better than I was. Wow. So I wouldn't want to get into the ring with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I guess it's all a matter of perspective.
It is.
He feels he's better. Better than what? How could you get better? I look at it. How
compared Keanu to Reeves, what?
How can Keanu get any better, period, in anything?
Yeah. Next up, Reeves was blown away by the Sahara Desert. After Reeves pitched the idea of John Wick walking through a desert, it was up to director Stahelski scout locations. He eventually settled on the Sahara after falling in love with the location during a visit. But if the director thought the Sahara was special, it was nothing compared to Reeves. Reeves states, I had never been to the Sahara, and to go there... What a magical and amazing, profound place. That's what he told Heavy. For me, to be in a John Wick suit playing John Wick while walking in those sand dunes was just a moment of my life. Now, basically, it's something that he always wanted to do. And somebody said, all right, we're going to do that and put this in this film. And here you go.
There you go. Exactly.
It's nice to be the king, huh?
Yeah,
Keanu.
Like I said, Keanu's... I would watch Keanu watch paint dry.
All right. This is what I like to talk about. The library fight was inspired by Bruce Lee's Game of Death. So Stahelski took inspiration from Bruce Lee and the New York Public Library to conjure up the scene where John Wick goes in search of a book containing emergency cash and weapons, only to find his exit blocked by Ernest, a 7'3" assassin played by NBA star Boban Marjanovic.
There you go. You got your Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yep. Influence. So he liked the idea of Reeves going up against the biggest stunt guy we can get.
We could find, yeah.
Yeah, we could find in such an enclosed space. He states, Keanu won't be able to get around him. And that'll be funny to try and shoot like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bruce Lee in A Game of Death, the director told The Observer. So, yeah. So my thoughts were correct.
Yeah. And in which is actually that's a terrific fight sequence with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And yeah.
Yeah. I always love that. For the fact that if you look at Kareem's kick to Bruce Lee, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And he didn't have any experience with martial arts before that either.
Nope.
What else here? What else do you have, Mark?
Oh, Keanu had to learn how to get beat up realistically. As well as learning martial arts moves and how to use firearms, Reeves had to develop another set of skills for the film. He had to learn how to get beat up, or more specifically, how to get beat up and make it look realistic to an audience. Yeah.
And in a safe way, I imagine.
I guess Keanu likes Fight Club and he just can't talk about it. I don't know.
I guess so.
Here's an interesting quote. He's not heroic all the time. He gets beat up, Reeves explains to Heavy. And that is another kind of skill, to be able to take the reactions. It is one thing to hit somebody, but it is another thing to get hit. That is a different part of the dance. And for all you Fight Club members, please do not tell us that Keanu is there. Okay. We will move on.
Okay.
He views the film as a battle for John Wick's soul. So This is interesting. I got to read this. John Wick 3 Parabellum is ostensibly about a hitman doing battle with an army of assassins, but Reeves viewed it as, quote-unquote, a battle between two sides of himself that I call John and John Wick. This is what he told NBC. Quote-unquote, John is the guy who just wants to be left alone, who seeks a quiet life in which to remember his wife. And in order to do so, for that, he has to engage the side of himself that is John Wick, the side that knows how to fight to the death. John Wick is the only one who can help John survive, which is pretty cool. Mark Dacascos was a mentor to Keanu Reeves. So this is interesting. Martial arts legend Mark Dacascos makes a memorable appearance as Zero, the most lethal of all high table assassins dispatched to deal with John Wick. A real-life karate and kung fu champion, Reeves credits Dacascos as with adding another layer of authenticity to the film while helping him reach the new heights in terms of his fighting skills. He states, Mark brought a Zero to life with both a hard-boiled noir quality and a tongue-in-cheek humor.
Yeah, and he did that well.
Yeah, that's
what he did both well.
Yeah, that's what Reeves told Girl magazine. It was especially a good experience for me to train with Mark because he's such an expert that he pushed me to that much more. So, yeah, he loves giving kudos to those that actually help him out and what he does. And Mark Dacascos has been filming these martial arts kind of movies and shows for years. So it's nice that Keanu credits him with helping him in support.
Yeah, well, that's what Keanu would do.
The last one, which I think, Kat, you mentioned before, John Wick came under attack for feral cats.
Yeah.
All right, so the other little part of an article states, John Wick had more than just an army of assassins to contend with. He also had to deal with cats, lots of cats. When Stileski first scouted locations in Morocco, it was winter and there were only a few around. The situation had changed by the summer. He states, we show up and shoot and there were literally thousands of cats, okay? And the cats have balls of steel. They're not afraid of anything.
That would be a feral cat.
That is a feral cat. Very much like the ones you probably see in Disney World or Disneyland, because that's what they use to get rid of all the rats.
I thought you were going to say very much like the ones I see here on the farm.
Well, that too.
They do the same job.
Yeah, but the only cats I see around me are probably bobcats.
Ew, yeah.
Or maybe a few house cats that are.
And they're keeping the other cats away.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is what Stileski told Entertainment Weekly, that wranglers had to round up the cats in massive cages where they were kept and fed while Reeves and his co-stars filmed. Well, at least they were nice to the cats after they got them. So
very humane. And that's probably the best meals they'd had in a long time.
Probably. And I'm sure they're like, can we go home with you?
Yeah. So they'll catch and release. Around here, they have programs where they'll catch feral cats and they'll neuter and spay them and release them. So it cuts out the overpopulation.
So,
I'm surprised Keanu didn't do that with his own money. That's the kind of guy he is.
He does donate to certain organizations like that. If you guys have any information, let us know. All right. Now we're going to move on to quotes.
We are.
Yep. Kat, what do you got?
My quotes are from the scenes I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the first one that I messed up, pretty good. But the quote at the end of the fight that Zero and John have when John kills Zero, or he looks like he's dead, and John's sitting there and Zero sits up and says, that was a pretty good fight. And John gets up and walks away, and Zero says, don't worry about me, John. I just need a minute. I'll catch up to you. And of course, John says, no, you won't.
Yeah.
So that was one of my favorite quotes or moments. What's yours?
That would be from the Bowery King to the adjudicator about John and finding him. And basically, this is the Bowery King talking to the adjudicator, saying, "Welcome, my mission control, my brainstem of operation, the information super flyway from whence I control the word on the street, the way of the world." And the adjudicator goes, "With pigeons." The Bowery King says, "Yes, you see rats with wings, but I see the internet. No IP addresses, no digital footprint. Can't track it, can't hack it, can't trace it."
Yeah.
"And if you eat it, be forewarned." He says something like that. I didn't get the whole quote between both of them.
I love that you can't.
I think hack he suggested don't eat it.
Well, he loves his pigeons. He wouldn't want anybody to eat them. But yeah, the Bowery King has a lot of great quotes. He's a little over the top.
Yeah. Did you have another one?
I found the quote, Winston's quote, when he says to John, you know, where we get the name of the film from. But the Latin is "Si vis pacem, parabellum," which, again, translates directly to "Let him who desires peace prepare for war." So that was Winston's little "Si vis pacem, parabellum." And I like in all three movies how the characters will speak in a different language. You know, it almost emphasizes those lines. And then we get in their caption underneath what they're actually saying. Like Zero speaks Indonesian at one point in the scene I talked about, when John gets up and leaves with Sharon. And I believe what he says is that we are the same, not harbingers of death, but that we're the same. And he's speaking in Indonesian. And then, of course, like a lot of the characters, he ends everything with Mr. Wick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that would be my quote. One of my favorites is Winston.
Winston always has the best quotes, though. Wait until
cover chapter 4. Oh my god, one of my favorite moments, and I'll keep my mouth shut. But yeah, Winston kills me.
I'll be looking at that. I'll probably be going to the theater on Sunday. We're recording this on a Thursday, but I'm hoping
you'll have to tell me when you see it. You'll have to tell me if you can figure out what my favorite Winston line is.
I'll have to figure that one out.
I think you'll get it.
All right, I only have one more, ladies and gentlemen. So this is one from Sophia Al-Azwar, and this is regarding her daughter to John and what she sacrificed. And she states, "Part of me longs for her, and I have to kill that part of myself every day just to keep her safe, because you have to kill what you love." And it's showing Halle Berry being vulnerable, her character being vulnerable to John. Because the first reaction of her towards John, because he's asking all of this of her to help him out, but she had to sacrifice her own daughter and not be with her.
Right. And she could possibly, she puts her daughter in peril by helping John.
Yeah.
Even with that, because the High Table uses their families against them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when she says she has to kill it every day. She's talking about her memory.
And her thoughts. Her memory of her daughter. Her love. Because every day would hurt. Mm-hmm. And that sucks.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend that as a coping mechanism.
No. All right. Well, that was our coverage of John Wick 3.
I had a couple little pieces of news that I found.
Sure.
Last night, and it's about there's a movie coming up called Ballerina, and it takes place between John Wick 3 and John Wick Chapter 4. And I think it was 2 days ago they confirmed it started filming, and confirmed the chairman of Lionsgate confirmed that it will be released in the spring or summer of 2024. So, and that's going to be based on Rooney, the ballerina we see on stage.
That was tortured by the dictator. Well, yeah,
by the toe shoes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But it's based on her story, which will be interesting. And Ana de Armas is going to play that.
Ana de Armas?
Yes. Okay. Yes. You got it. Not me. So, yeah, you don't want to hear most of my pronunciations of names. It's enough that I can read and spell them. So that was news with Ballerina. Cool. And I'm going to be looking forward to that one. And the other piece of news was about the pre-sequel, The Continental, that has been kicked around. Is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Well, it is. It's a pre-sequel, and it's based in the 1970s on Winston's story at the Continental. Hmm. It's going to be more like a mini movie. It's 3 episodes that are 90 minutes long. So a real mini, mini series. And the director confirmed that that will be coming out. Erica Lee, the director in Collider, confirmed that that will be coming out in September of this year.
Oh, wow. That's pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
That's very interesting. I remember there was a movie years ago, and it had Jodie Foster in it and Dave Bautista in it. And it kind of reminded me of The Continental. It might have been the Grand Royale.
Hmm.
And I might have gotten confused about it, but honestly, I still have to go back and look at it because it looks interesting, because it kind of reminded me of a hotel that kind of was a haven for...
Safe haven for assassins.
Yeah, or scum and villainy. Who knows?
Well, you know, it's nice in John Wick. The assassins aren't necessarily scum, you know, and villains.
I know.
We have villains, but, you know, they're pretty high class. We get some upper echelon assassins.
That's what I thought, and I always thought that was The Continental. But the fact that we actually do get a movie now, or I think originally they were thinking of a TV series.
Yeah, this is a TV series. It's okay. Going to be streaming on Peacock. But there's only 3 episodes. That's why I said it's going to be like a little mini movie, especially
Hopefully for those of us who like to binge each episode.
Yeah, 90 minutes. Each episode's going to be 90 minutes. But instead of chopping it up into 5 or 6 episodes, they're doing 3 long episodes.
It's kind of like what they used to do back in the 80s and 90s with miniseries. Like, remember with Salem's Lot? That was done over a multiple amount of days.
When they tell the whole story.
Yeah, it was the one story, but they did it over multiple amount of days. I think that's a pretty good idea. I think actually that works out best. It's very much almost like what we get with Disney Plus, with The Mandalorian and all these different shows that we get, like Willow, which honestly, it didn't do well. I had high hopes for it. Yeah. But there are other shows that you get on Apple TV Plus as well that I get into, and Extrapolations is one that I watch now that is very intriguing.
That's
a suggestion I have out there for what I've been watching lately.
When a lot of British programs are limited series. Like you said, they're really nice. You get 6 episodes. It tells a whole story. I can watch it knowing that I'm not going to be strung out for 11 seasons that might bore me, like one of those shows we know a lot of people stopped watching in the middle because they did not like one of the seasons. So yeah. I just like that it's not all drawn out. I know I'm going to sit down, I'm going to watch this story in 6 episodes, and it's going to wrap up. I don't always need a cliffhanger that I need to wait until, you know, 9 months from now to see.
Yeah, one of those shows that you talked about too that is British that I do enjoy. Our friends do actually cover it on Podcastica. That would be Penny and Greg. And they do Extraordinary. And I'm looking forward to another season too, because that looks good. It's something that looks like it could be multiple seasons, but the way they left it off was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a definitely fun show.
It's a fun little romp. Mm-hmm. But to move right along, we haven't done this in a long time, but we'll do it now. Rating of this movie between 1 and 10 on an adrenaline level. So, Kat, what do you give John Wick 3 Parabellum?
Oh, I have a hard time with scales, but 1 to 10.
That's why I try not to do them that often on this show.
I know. It's like when you go to the doctor and they go, what's your scale of pain? And I'm like, I don't know which one is you want to die. Is that 10? So anyway, I would say I can't give anything a 10. I would give it a 9 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it, one thing that I didn't find had as much continuity for me was when they go to Casablanca. That just kind of took me out of the whole New York thing. It might just be me. Mm-hmm. And personally, I didn't feel that the Halle Berry character was written very well.
I think it was out of context. It was something that they kind of shoveled in there.
And I couldn't figure it out if I didn't like who they chose for that or the actress. But I think I really came down to I don't think it was very well written.
I don't think it was.
I think I would have chosen a different actress. I love Halle Berry, but in that role, I would have chosen someone else. But I think a lot of it was the writing, and that to me, it really took me out of the New York vibe.
They could have easily have just edited that out and not even have that story in there, and it would have moved on regardless.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's why I can't give it a 10.
I think it was for the fact that we have Halle Berry. She's interested. Let's put her as a character. Let's give this side story. It gives something more of what one of the effects that he gets from the library, and it gives it meaning, which is fine.
Well, she worked her butt off to play that role too.
She played many
action films. And if you go on YouTube and search, it shows the training she went through. And it's pretty interesting for the gunplay, especially.
Oh yeah. Especially with the dogs around too. And you could see that she was really into how she felt about the dogs, especially when they shoot the one dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, go, if you go on YouTube and do a search, it's a really good sequence. It shows how they really train, because she did those stunts and with the guns. And one thing with the gun play in these movies, they do it realistically a little more than a lot of them do. You know, you see him run out of bullets and have to grab someone else's gun or reload. He doesn't have the unlimited bullet magic bullet gun. So they really work hard to get their acting in line with what would be accurate.
Very true.
So, all right. How's that for taking you off track? Where were we? Oh, ranking. Yeah. So 9 out of 10.
Yeah. 9 out of 10 for you.
How about you?
Well, just for the nonstop action, because obviously that's what we cover a lot on this particular podcast. Well, this movie basically gives it to you, and the feel of being in the movie as well, and that feeling of adrenaline rush that John is going through during the sequence of the film. So it's never ending. So I have to give it to you when it comes to that too, as like 9 out of 10. It puts me in those feels. Yeah. As far as like certain sequences, the comedic stuff could be put aside, or even certain sequences like we were just talking about before, they could be taken out and it could have been nonstop.
Yeah, you could be playing that
video game.
But yeah, you can see the adrenaline. You can actually see how tired and worn out that he gets, and still continues to fight. But there's a lot of adrenaline just sitting and watching.
Yeah.
This one.
Makes you on the edge of your seat as if you have to go to the bathroom really bad and you don't want to leave.
Well, then you just don't get that extra large soda at the theater.
Or you just wear a Depends.
Hush. Don't you dare. Don't go there.
Wear a diaper.
Yeah, we don't want to know, Mark.
I don't want to
know your movie strategy.
I don't do that.
Okay. You just read it somewhere. I know.
What? Reddit? Who's been talking about me?
Hush. That's a whole different story, folks. We don't want to hear more. That's a
whole different podcast, apparently.
I guess so. I don't know.
All right. We're at the very end of the particular podcast, so this is where can listeners hear you, or if you have any podcast recommendations?
Oh, well, they can hear me right here, and hopefully very soon on our podcast about John Wick 4, which saw yesterday, going to see it again. It's the most John Wickian John Wick you can get, and it's really terrific. Yeah, unless you come out to the farm and hear me talking to my goats, that's the only other place you'll be able to hear me soon. Maybe in a live reaction for our friend's podcast covering Yellow Jackets, Yellow Jackets WTF on Podcastica Network. And they do a live reaction after show. And it's fun. Mark, you did it last week. And they're asking a lot of friends and guests from our group from Podcastica and other podcasters to join in on those after shows. And they're pretty fun. You know, you get to kind of, it's like what I would do if I was watching with friends instead of here at home alone with my goats. But you get to chat a little bit, and there's, you know, there's a chat room. So
yeah,
that would be the only other place you're going to hear or see me soon. Like I said, unless you want to come and visit, it's a nice Airbnb. Got a lot of baby goats, you know. It's a whole different kind of adrenaline when you're waiting for baby goats. I digress. I have three pregnant goats and two pregnant sheep. So I'm going to run out right after this and see if anybody's had babies. What all about right. you, Mark? What else are you doing?
Obviously, everybody could hear me here in Adrenaline Cinema Podcast, as always. Next up will probably be, probably, everybody, because every time I put out an episode, it's kind of different from what I mentioned before. But most likely be the anniversary episode of King Kong with Jerry and I. So Jerry Gomez and I will be covering that, the original King yeah. Kong.
Well, of course, it's Jerry.
So
we'll be covering 70s that. And yeah, and you guys, I like listening to you guys. You're really good together.
You could also hear me on Panels to Pixels podcast coming up. We haven't recorded it yet. There's been a little space. I'm still in the midst of doing things, but hopefully Rob, Frank, and I, waiting on Steve to come back, but we're going to be covering Ant-Man and the Wasp and Quantumania, and do that. And then that's about it for Panels to Pixels. But you could also hear me with Rob on his podcast, Fantasy Picks Movie Edition. So I believe they're covering, of all things, Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. I'm hoping to be on that. So check that out on there. You can find all that stuff out on PyroCarEntertainment.com. Mm-hmm. So literally, you can find all the podcasts there. You could also hear my little voice memos on certain podcasts that I send out for feedback, like Run for Your Lives, when Podcastica does The Mandalorian and stuff like that. So I like to throw out that out there when I can, just like Steve does, because I don't do live Steving. But no. I do live marketing.
Who else could do live Steving? I missed a chance to live Steve with Steve in San Francisco. I know. I kicked myself afterwards.
Should have.
You know? Yeah, I know. Well, maybe next time we all get together.
Yeah, hopefully next time we could do something all together and just have fun and just like a make a joke podcast of us all getting together and having fun.
Or group feedback.
Oh,
Paige and Tara and I did that once for Game of Thrones. That was pretty funny. Seriously, people, it was 5 minutes long. They had to cut it down a little bit. You know, it was after convention in Chicago. But yeah, as you know, as a group and people, please send in feedback. You can send Mark feedback about this. Correct us on anything we had wrong.
Or if you have any thoughts and anything that you don't like that we had said. And for you to submit your feedback, all you have to do is just go to our Facebook group, which would be facebook.com/AdrenalineCinemaPodcast. Obviously, you've heard us, so word of mouth is a great way to spread the word about us. And we could be heard on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Deezer, or whatever player
choice
you use.
Well, and if you feel like it, please leave a review. That really helps, too.
Yeah, the review actually does help us. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify is another one that's like huge. But, literally all you have to do is that and just send in your feedback. You could send it to adrenalinecinemapodcast@gmail.com as well. You could easily type out your thoughts. And if you don't feel like typing out your thoughts, and you could say, all right, I'm just going to put the email, but I'm going to record my voice on my phone. And then you could just send it as an attachment, and then we'll just pop it in the podcast.
You could live Steve your comments to Mark about our podcast.
That is true. That I think that's how Steve does it. Other than that's how you could get back to us. Like I stated before, you know, all you have to do is go to PyroCarEntertainment.com, and you could see that in the show notes. That's where you could, you know, see everything
that's
going on here.
Listen to everything they're doing now. You can go back and listen to your other programs in your backlog also.
Yep. Yep. And if you have any thoughts on those, you can bring them up. It's great.
Thoughts, suggestions, live Steving, corrections, they're all welcome.
All right. Well, that was our show. And I want to thank everybody for listening. And thanks for Kat for being on.
Oh, thank you. It was a joy to be back. And I'm looking forward to discussing 4.
Yeah. Don't worry. about me, John?
Just gotta catch my breath. I'll catch up to you, John.
No, you won't.
Well, that was our show. Thank you guys for listening. I'm Mark.
And I'm Kat.
And we'll talk to you guys later.
Later.